This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 2, Division 3 podcast, and it is officially May Madness time. All the conference tournament champions are crowned. We have an NCAA tournament bracket, and we are, you know, basically on the eve of the NCAA tournament. I'm here, Matt Kinnear, with Josh Davey down in Inside Lacrosse's Baltimore offices. Kyle is up in New Hampshire, focusing on the D3 North. And it's been an exciting week. How is everyone doing?
Kyle, I will defer to you. How are you doing? You're the most, I feel like your moods ebb and flow a little bit more than mine. No offense.
This has not been a good week so far. but, you know, it has nothing to do with lacrosse so much as, you know, when you miss a day in our field, I feel like I'm still scrambling to recover from missing a day from being sick last week, and it just ruins your whole workflow. So that's a personal thing. It has nothing to do with who's going to win here, who's going to lose, but it's been a struggle, and I am on the struggle bus. I'm not even driving. They won't even let me drive. I'm just on it. But we're here. We're ready to break down these brackets, and I'm pretty excited.
And Kyle, you're suffering some car issues, as am I. I was stranded after my trip to Loyola for the Patriot League semifinals this week. Stranded over on 695, but we're all good. Everything's good. So it's the most exciting time of year. You got to look at the positive.
Yeah.
Let's look at this bracket. First things first is, you know, we're going to talk about the games because the games are the important part. But let's talk about the actual bracket. Selection Sunday, this bracket comes out. You know, people are going to have their snubs. People are going to have their surprises. We wrote about it on InsideLacrosse.com. Pool C bids is the first thing we're going to talk about. And, Josh, I'm going to turn this over to you. You look at these Pool C bids. F&M gets into the tournament. It's probably the most noteworthy happening in that. What do you make of F&M getting one of those Pool C bids after the week they had?
I think that it is a direct correlation. Well, so, right, so to preface it, they lost in the semifinals to Ursinus, so that's the second time they lost to that team. In the previous week, I believe, in the D3 regional rankings, Ursinus had been like 8 or 9. They had been higher than maybe I would have expected them to. So at the end of the day, you're evaluating these wins and losses. It doesn't matter what we say about each team. It's all about where the NCAA ranks these teams in their regional rankings leading up to this event, or leading up to, you know, the selection Sunday. So I'm pumped for Coach Cavallaro and my boy Coach Yanks, one of my best friends, is assistant coach there. I know they're really fired up and excited to make the most of the opportunity. You know, it was weird. You know, Stevens not making, you know, we can kind of dive right in. Stevens not winning, I believe, the Empire 8, and St. John Fisher upsetting them. You know, Stevens not really having enough of a resume to get in, you know, in a way that sort of helps F&M. So I think that there are ways where, you know, I think it's 4-4, right? Is it 4 teams from the north and 4 teams from the south? I believe it is for those Pool C bids. But anyway, F&M gets a, you know, an interesting bid. They're going to play in the north bracket, but they're going to play a south team in Stevenson. You know, I don't really have too much of a hot take. I think they were, like, you know, one of the last teams in, but I think that they're certainly worthy of being selected into this tournament, and I expect them to win their first round game and have a competitive second round game with Tufts.
Yeah, Stevens is the interesting – they're the snub. You know, they're the team that got left out. And they're an interesting case because I feel like coaches I've talked to this year have all said Stevens is an underrated – even at, you know, when they were ranked number 10, 11, 12, Stevens is an underrated team. People thought very highly of this team. Obviously, they didn't have the performance they wanted in the Empire 8 tournament, but I think that might have clouded our vision a little bit about their tournament resume. Because what people perceive a team's talent is, what their resume, totally different things. Stevens did not have the high strength of schedule games that, you know, like a Lynchburg did, or F&M. You know, like it's
16-3.
Mm-hmm.
16 wins is a lot, but not against, you know, their biggest win was like Christopher Newport, maybe. So their losses coming to Roanoke, who I think was ranked like 15 or 16th in the South, to Tufts and St. John Fisher in their conference championship. And outside of that, I don't think they made a play to a top 30 team. And that hurts you, you know? I mean, there's a reason why, Lynchburg and FNM lost five or six games, but they won one or two against top 10, top 25 teams. And we certainly understand now that those games in February matter.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the strong takeaways from this is those games that happen on February 16th could be the one that gets you into the NCAA tournament. I was talking to someone in reference to the D1 bracket who is close to the situation there. And, you know, sometimes it not only comes down to one or two goals that you didn't score, it comes down to one or two goals that a team that you didn't even play scored or didn't score. That's just how the math works sometimes when you're talking about strength of schedule and strength of opponent schedule, things like that. So it's very complicated, but tough way to go out for Stevens, but does not diminish the year that they had. We're going to look at the actual bracket itself. And Kyle, one of the things that jumps out to me, focusing on the North a little bit, is Tufts. They're the top seed. If you're Tufts, you are not looking at this bracket and thinking, oh, I've got a clear coast to the semifinals right now, are you?
I think it's the strongest bracket, but I don't even think that's regional bias. I think a lot of people from all over the country are looking at the bracket like going, whoa. But they're looking at it like, oh no, we have to play Tufts. Do you know what I mean? I think that they're still operating from a position of strength. But man, if you watch the NESCAC championship like I did, it was the craziest conference championship I can remember in Division III in a very long time. A lot of these, the D3 championships are, you have these two top teams that end up playing each other at the end, or you get a surprise team that gets an upset, and then that team gets blown out in the final. Tufts against Williams was unbelievable. A goalie goal. Mason Pollock's third goal of the year is what put Tufts up by one. Williams tied it.
Dude, from 16 yards, and then they went to overtime. He pulled up from like two steps inside the restraining box.
It was incredible. It was incredible. But I think that also, if you're these other teams, you're like, why did we get stuck here in this bracket? I mean, the geography works out, and that's why you're there. But I think that you're always looking to advance one or two rounds ahead if you get that first win. And I don't see there's any way that you're not going to end up hitting a jumbo. You know what I mean?
Tufts is the number one team. They're the number one team for a reason. Keeping in the North, one thing I would have liked to have seen is we're probably going to get, if Union beats Cortland, we're going to get another Union-RIT matchup, which would be the third as they played each other twice in the Liberty League. I would have loved to have seen like Amherst and Union maybe switched on this. So then Amherst maybe doesn't have to play a Wesleyan in the second round, a team that they would be playing for the third time, just to switch it up a little bit. I think playing a team three times is difficult for sure, but it would be nice to see some matchups that we're a little more unfamiliar with. And you know what I mean?
No, that totally makes sense. And that's why I focused on Tufts in the sense that, their second round opponent is going to be Franklin Marshall or Stevenson. I certainly think Tufts is heavily favored against either team, but it's not like it's a cakewalk by any means. And then the quarterfinal round, you just get to anybody's game at that point, whether it's going to be Wesleyan or if it's going to be Amherst in that quarterfinals, the NESCAC matchup meeting multiple times. It's going to be a fun game for all of us to watch, no doubt. But that is a very tough road. And it's tough, it's pretty tough all the way down the North bracket as well, as Kyle said. If I'm Tufts, you know you're going into this with a lot of work to do, as it always is. But, on that same note about one of the questions that I kind of posed ahead of this, and we're going to talk about the easiest route to the bracket, because I think Salisbury has a pretty Salisbury, after they get past Lynchburg, has a better path to the tournament than I would say York does. But anyway, going back to Tufts, I want to talk about momentum. Which team has the most momentum into this conference tournament? In a weird way, I think it's Tufts because of the way that they were tested and won those games. Shout out to Max Waldbaum, overtime goals in both games in the NESCAC tournament. That's just pretty incredible. But I think the fact that you get the best of an opponent, you get punched in the face, you have to come back, you have to hold a team scoreless in the fourth quarter like they did in the semifinals. You get tested as much as you physically can get tested, and you still come out with a win. That, to me, is the best thing you can do for your momentum. You get the equal parts of, we know we need to work our hardest to beat every team, but have the confidence of, we know that we can do it when someone brings their best on game day. Josh, when you're looking at this bracket and talking about teams that maybe come in with some heat, who kind of sticks out to you?
It's funny. I mean, you're obviously going to think immediately of like an RIT who's only lost one game this season. It was in Baltimore against Amherst in the Mustang Classic. You know, while we're talking about the North, let's keep it there. I think Williams is a team that I'm not as familiar with. Coach McCormick was just, you know, voted NESCAC Coach of the Year. At the same token, Matt, you're talking about how Tufts has a lot of momentum. I think Williams, now that they've played two games against Tufts, they've both been one-goal games. Their other loss came the first game of the season on March 3rd to Wesleyan, which was a two-goal game. They're 15-3, and they've lost by a total of four goals. I think in a weird way, even though they lost that championship to Tufts in the NESCAC championship, I think they come in as like a sleeper and an underdog that only teams in the NESCAC are familiar with. And I, you know, and they have an interesting path because I think we also need to talk about how there are four teams from the traditional Southern teams that are in the North in Elizabethtown, F&M, Stevenson, and Gettysburg. The Gettysburg-Williams game in the second round is really interesting because you're talking about maybe the third best team in the South coming up to the North and playing a Williams team that I feel like is flying under the radar. I feel like they have a lot of momentum and they should have a lot of confidence. Yes, they lost those two games, but if they were to make the semifinals and get past RIT, which I don't think, you know, if I had to predict, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but if they were, Tufts does not want to play them for a third time. So I think I like them as an underdog sleeper. And come May 15th in the quarterfinals, they're going to give, whether it's RIT, most likely RIT, a really tough game and might be able to get through to the semifinals.
Josh, I'm going to forgive you for assuming Gettysburg is going to go to that May 11th third round over St. John Fisher. We'll talk about our picks in a little bit. Kyle, what about you? Any kind of team that you're just looking at their path, looking at their recent history, and have some strong thoughts on heading into this bracket?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I've had a lot of people ask me this question the last couple of days. I even put up, you know, some poll ability to voice your opinions on Twitter to us. I think that the teams that are playing out of their normal comfort zone coming up north, I think they're at a little bit of a disadvantage in the bracket just because they're not going to see as much of these teams as they have. And if they get to play against them in the coming rounds. First of all, I want to like apologize to all the teams that were just like, hey, you're going to get rolled. Like, sorry, no offense. We just like really believe in our opinions. And I'm sorry, especially to Keene State, shout out New Hampshire. But I think that looking at the bracket, you know, you were talking about St. John Fisher. I think that's the best candidate for a first round upset if we're talking about seeded teams. But I still think that the powers in the NESCAC with Wesleyan and Amherst being able to, you know, one of them is going to cannibalize the other, right? But both of those teams are capable of beating someone like Tufts. Or if Tufts gets upset by F&M or Stevenson, then you have to look to that part of the bracket and see how that's going to shake out. And again, the Williams shout is great. I hadn't seen a ton of Williams, but watching them in the NESCAC championship, I now realize why they're there. And the thing that they do so well that you don't see a ton of D3 teams do is they utilize their D-mids to force turnovers. It's an unbelievable kind of way to play where everyone is trusted to guard who they're going to guard. And against Tufts, I mean, it's hard to match up anyway, but watching them, you know, slam hard on guys trying to drive on them, they're not scared of anyone. They're not scared of anyone. And that's definitely a team to watch throughout this tournament.
We're not to jump, but we're talking a lot about the North. Let's talk about the South real quick. Matt, you know, sort of the same question, right? Like, who do you think has an easier path? What are the intriguing matchups that you think, you know, as we've kept it pretty North heavy? I'm sure we'll hear about that from some of our fans on Twitter. But what are you seeing? How do you feel about the South bracket?
Well, sorry, Coach Childs, but I think we're going to see Salisbury Memorial Day weekend is my initial thought. I am going to go as far as say as I think they're unbeatable in the South bracket.
Interesting. I think you're forgetting about that second round matchup.
Oh, am I? Am I forgetting about that second round matchup? And no disrespect, Josh, to your boys, but I just Salisbury's depth of scoring, I think it just impresses me so much. Their goalkeeper is playing really well. I think it's their tournament in the South, at least. I'm not sold on who I think the national champion is going to be, but I think it's Salisbury's going to be there. Looking elsewhere in this bracket, though, for other interesting matchups in the South region is, a northern team coming south. You know, I think the kind of inter-regional movement is very interesting, but Ursinus versus Springfield. Ursinus, I made this comment last week on the podcast about watching them and just their toughness. They're like, you know, that not giving up, that ability to like take some hits and keep going and not give up at the end of the game and be able to come back like they did in their conference tournament. Really impressive. But Springfield is a team that I think is gelling at the right time. I talked with Coach Bugby following his 400th win, huge milestone. He's been there for 39 years. He suffered a great loss this offseason. You know, his daughter passed away under some surprising, tragic circumstances. And, he's very open about it. And it's he's doing everything he can. And the community up there is doing everything they can to kind of keep her spirit alive. And he's very open about it and how he is discussed it with the team, how the team has kind of rallied behind him. I think this is a team that's just going to have a little bit of an emotional edge with the way that coach has kind of, it's made this team gel together as a family even more than he's done over his 40 years. And if you look at the lineage of kind of coaches who have come from him, it's amazing. So I'm going to, kind of pick them as maybe one of the unseeded teams that's going to make some noise in that South region.
I think what's exciting when you look at the South also is, the potential second round matchups. When you're looking at four games, again, I'm going to just go based off of what I sort of have here. So if I am wrong or, you disagree, please say something. But, the potential for a Salisbury-Lynchburg rematch, which was an 11-9 game back in February, first game of the season for the Hornets, is really intriguing. Illinois-Wesley and Denison as a potential second round matchup. Probably the two best teams from the Midwest playing each other. Teams we don't talk about enough just because of where they are located. Potential either Cabrini Ursinus or Cabrini Springfield matchup. I think Ursinus wins that game, but I think that's a really, really intriguing matchup. Cabrini's a really interesting story, a team that got that one Pool B bid that flies under the radar. And Ursinus is a team that won their first ever Centennial Conference Championship under a first year head coach. We've talked about them a lot this year, but they're truly, truly an amazing story. And then WNL York, which is an awesome game from earlier this season. So, that's what's so cool about this bracket. It's what's cool about lacrosse in general is, in the NCAA basketball bracket, there are some, it's madness, right? That's why they call it March Madness. But you're getting literally the best teams in the country playing each other, and whoever wins four games makes it to Philly. It's almost as simple as that. So that's what's really cool about this bracket and gets me really excited is those games on Saturday are going to be unbelievable.
I really want to see Illinois Wesley and Denison happen. That is going to be an awesome game. Those teams are diametrically opposed. And that the action in that game, if that's not a 30-goal game combined, that's going to be a disappointment. I think that game has potential to be kind of breakout, as a standout game for that round. And I really hope it happens. But I'm not looking past Rhodes. If we're talking about teams that could pull a first round upset, I would not look past them at all.
Kyle, we're going to shift gears here. Let's get into prediction mode. How's that sound?
Oof.
Prediction mode, you like it?
Well, I will say I ran a poll on my Twitter account. And the possibility of sharing our brackets on this podcast. 159 people voted in it. 80% of the people that voted said yes, 5% said no, and 15% said shut up, Devitt.
I was one of those 15% that said shut up, Devitt. I will concede that.
that's what the option is there for. I figured people needed a third option there. But 80% feel like that means we have to do some predictions. So I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's do it. So we're recording this on Tuesday. We're going to have the first round that's played. Before you listen to this, essentially that play-in round. The second round is going to happen tomorrow night. So presumably you have listened to this Wednesday morning, and then you can watch the games. But we're going to predict the third round games as well, because we won't record until after the third round comes next week. So, and also I want to, Coach Bugby, I said 39 years, 36 years. I don't want to add 3 years to his tenure there. He did 400 wins in 36 years. But so we're going to pick our games from essentially the second round through the third round. Want me to start?
Let's do it. You start, you kick it off.
So I have Tufts beating the play-in winner, FNM, Wesleyan, Amherst over Elizabethtown, Williams, my upset, St. John Fisher over Gettysburg. The way their goalie played in that tournament, the way their defense, they had some guys with some really nice cost turnovers. I think they're going to cause some havoc. I think it's going to be a defensive struggle, but I think St. John Fisher is going to win that game. Union and RIT. I'll go to the quarterfinals here. Tufts is going to advance. Amherst, Williams, and RIT. So that's pretty boring. That's kind of the like business as usual. But I just think that those teams are too good. The Wesleyan Amherst game is going to be a battle, but I think those NESCAC teams in general are too good, and RIT is just a phenomenal team as well. So I think the usual suspects in the quarterfinals. Josh,
Real quick to preface this, you mentioned Amherst, Elizabethtown. I have to give a shout out to my guy, Coach Brzezinski at Elizabethtown. Elizabethtown had never won a conference tournament in the history of Elizabethtown lacrosse. They have won. Coach Brzezinski has been the coach there for 3 years, and they have won 3 straight landmark conference tournaments. So what he's been able to do there is nothing short of amazing. He's one of the hardest working guys in lacrosse, an unbelievable attitude, a guy I would love to have the opportunity to play for. So I just want to give him a quick shout out. We've had him on this podcast before, but they get a tough matchup with Amherst. But either way, mine is almost identical. I have Tufts, FNM, Wesleyan, Amherst, Williams, Gettysburg beating St. John Fisher, Union, RIT, and then my quarterfinals, Matt, are the exact same as yours. Tufts, Amherst, Williams, RIT.
Wow, we're boring. Kyle, do you have any changes from what we just did?
I do have I've got a quick story. One of our freelancers is Chris Rosenthal. He does a lot of pro stuff for us and has an NCAA feature on Asher Nolting from High Point on the site right now. I got a text from him yesterday that said, a coworker just asked me who looks good in the D3 bracket, and if there's any possible sleeper picks, do you like anyone? And this is definitely a gambling thing. So my exact response, Matt, I had basically your picks. I said I like RIT. Upset potential is pretty low here. But I think the higher seeds all over the bracket are going to be in the Final Four. That's just me. But I do agree with your St. John Fisher upset pick. I think I'm into that. In the north, but everything else is spot on from your picks, Matt.
Also, one thing of note that's related to this conversation is Terry just wrote an article about the openings at Harvard and Navy in the Division I world, and John Thompson, head coach at Amherst, is a name that has come up for a potential for a Harvard job. So, I think a few weeks back, Kyle, you and I talked about the transition from D3 to D1 and coaches and some guys. So that's just some of the postseason to be thinking about as well. Is that these teams that are having a lot of success in the Division III world, those coaches are getting noticed for Division I jobs as well. So if you haven't read that article, it's also on intellacrosse.com right now. Should we do the South?
Well, Kyle, who do you have between Wesley and Amherst? I'm not clear there.
Oh, Amherst.
Amherst, okay.
Which, I'm sorry, Coach Reba. I am sorry.
That's your boy.
I know. I feel really bad. But, it's the job. You got to make a pick.
You're off the Christmas card list.
Yeah, I'm not getting any gifts.
Let's go to the South. I've already told you who my representative for the national championship is going to be. And again, I pretty much preface this with every year I pencil in Salisbury until they prove me otherwise. So Salisbury, Lynchburg, Illinois Wesleyan, Denison, Cabrini, Springfield, as I talked about, is my kind of upset pick there, WNL, and York. York's going to beat WNL again. That was a tough game the first time around, but I just trust their York's defensive ability to shut down elite playmakers, and I think they will continue to do that again in this game. I don't really know what to do with the Springfield-Cabrini game. There's part of me that wants to pick the upset and pick the underdog story. Except, yeah, screw it. I'm just going to go with it. Springfield is going to be Cabrini in that round as well. I know what Cabrini is capable of, but I'm going to go with my heart instead of my head maybe for that one.
I have that coming too, so don't worry.
Denison and then Salisbury, obviously advancing in the quarterfinals. Josh?
Oh, Matt.
I wonder what you're going to pick here.
Well, I have Salisbury winning. I have Lynchburg handling Transylvania, Illinois Wesleyan, Denison, Cabrini, Ursinus, WNO York. So I don't have Springfield with the upset. I have Ursinus, Centennial Conference champs. Got to go with them. They've earned the right to get through the first round. Salisbury, Lynchburg, come on. Do I even have to talk about it? This is where the Seagulls go out early. Lynchburg makes their run. They put their stamp on the season. They've had a lot of ups and downs. They knock off Salisbury in a close one, maybe even overtime, out on the Eastern Shore. Denison defeats Illinois Wesleyan. This is the hardest one, I think, in the second round for me to pick outside of like Wesleyan Amherst in that first up in the north. I think Cabrini or Sinus is going to be an awesome, awesome game. I'm going to go with Cabrini just for the fact that they've been there before. Or Sinus, like I said, under a first-year head coach, you know, granted, they did just win the, you know, Centennial Conference Championship, like I mentioned, but I think that this moment is a little even bigger than that, and playing that game at Cabrini, I think, right? Cabrini would be the higher seed, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though they're probably less than 30 miles away from each other, I think Cabrini gets to win. And then WNO York, I think, is also going to be an excellent game. I'm going to go with Coach Child Spartans in that one. So, yeah, I have Lynchburg, Denison, Cabrini, York as my final four in the South.
One note, one tangent real quick about Cabrini. You know, they're going to be the least battle-tested team heading into this. I know they have good games on their schedule. They played Salisbury earlier in the year.
Of late, you mean.
But of late, they haven't had a significant game that they're going to have to play going to this. So one argument, they're going to be fresh. They're going to be ready to go. Other argument, they just haven't seen players that fast, players that skilled. So maybe they're not going to be quite ready. Josh, it looks like you've already got the you're going to be selling the movie rights for this Lynchburg-Salisbury game. You made it sound like it's going to be the most dramatic exciting
drama,
Hornet win ever.
The only drama that is built is just by how good Salisbury it is. It's not anything different. I just think, you know, Lynchburg loses the ODAC championship. I think they got a little chip on their shoulder, you know? They're not used to being like that last team in. They've won, you know, they've made the tournament now since, I think, my sophomore year was the last time Lynchburg had not made it, which was 2011. And they were cutting it close this year. I think if there were a couple things that went differently, they would have been out. So I am, you know, they played WNL to 2 1-goal games, one of them in overtime. WNL scored with like 20 seconds left or something, 4 seconds left to win the ODAC championship. So I know those guys. I'm going with what I know, my man.
Kyle, let's run through your South bracket.
This is the time where I wish that this was a video podcast because I had to put it on mute because I was kind of freaking out about a couple of these picks. So I'm excited. So I got Salisbury, Lynchburg, Illinois Wesleyan, though I think that Rhodes has definite upset potential there. I got Denison. I have Cabrini, but I also have Ursinus, and I'm going to tell you why. This year is the first year in the history of the NUMAC and the Pilgrim League before that, and ever after, that Clark defeated Springfield 14-12 in the regular season. So I cannot pick Springfield. I will not pick Springfield. I don't think they're going to win. I got Washington Lee, and I got York. My second round is Salisbury, Denison, Ursinus, and York.
I can see WNL beat. That is going to be such a good game. WNL York. I mean, again, yeah. I said already, these games are so competitive. I get so excited thinking about, you know, May 15th is going to be next Wednesday, and we're talking about the 8 best teams playing each other. It's really exciting.
It really is bizarre how outrageously quick this D3 tournament goes and how prepared you have to be to face this gauntlet of really good teams in such a short time span.
And I think that's to the point I think Kyle made earlier that, you know, Gettysburg, FNM, Elizabethtown, Stevenson are at disadvantage because these southern teams know each other. You know, like Salisbury, Lynchburg know each other. Cabrini or Sinus, they're going to have plenty of film they can get on all these teams. So, you know, York have played the teams that have to go up and or down in this bracket, and playing teams they're not as familiar with are definitely at a disadvantage.
We have an interview with Coach Cavallaro later on in this podcast talking about F&M's entry into the NCAA tournament, talking about their first round matchup a bit and a little bit about their season. But I want to shift gears a little bit, and Kyle, you and I can talk a little of the D2 bracket. It's the first year of the expanded 12-team bracket, which is great news, I think, for everyone. You know, the Division II is essentially the same size as Division I men's lacrosse right now in terms of the number of teams. I think that there's a hope at some point to have conference tournament automatic qualifiers to get into the Division II tournament. That's not the case right now. Those conference tournaments, though, are significant in, you know, for instance, LIU Post might have had a chance to get into this field if it would have won its East Coast Conference Championship Tournament game against Mercy, who is the number 4 seed in this bracket. So they're significant in that way, but they don't give you automatic entry into the NCAA tournament. Lemoyne won the Northeast 10. Just, again, the way that I feel about Salisbury is similar to the way I feel about Lemoyne. It's a machine at this point. So they're the number 1 seed in the North. Limestone is the number 1 seed in the South, and they are undefeated, 18-0. Kyle, I guess the general question is, you're looking at Lemoyne, you're looking at Limestone. Are they clear favorites, or do you think that they're going to have tests along the way?
I think that Lemoyne's tests are much harder than Limestone's, but absolutely, I don't think they're non-existent. Do you know what I mean? I think that people are underestimating Tampa, who had a rough start and totally recovered, totally redeemed themselves, went on a huge run here to be seeded. I think that bye in the first round, I don't know if we're talking about it too much, but having this, you know, at least a week off, if not more, for some of these teams is not good. Taking time off when you're clicking is bad, no matter what sport or team you are. So I would pay attention to that. If we're talking about possible upset potential here, I love what UIndy's doing. I think that you're probably looking past them. I really want to see them play Belmont Abbey in the second round, but getting past the Queens team is actually a big ask because they have put up a big fight against teams like Limestone this season. In the North, I think that all signs point to a titanic rubber match between Lemoyne and Merrimack, and I am all about it. I want to see it. I don't know if I can guarantee it because Merrimack against Adelphi, if they get past Mercyhurst, who, by the way, also is the only team to beat Mercy this year and beat them handily. So if you're comparing records and teams, let's look at that, even though they're not slated to play each other here early. But yeah, I would definitely look for that, but I think you're right. Lemoyne and Limestone have the path and have the best, you know, way to Philadelphia. But I don't think it's as cut and dry as everyone's saying. Everyone's saying that, you know, they're going to roll. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think the level of Division II play has really gone up this year and kind of been spread around against all these teams. And all these teams in this bracket are worthy. You know, I think a lot of people will point to the D3 bracket and be like, why do we play the first round? Stupid AQs. We don't like them, blah, blah, blah. First of all, you're wrong. Second of all, look at the D2 bracket. This is loaded. There's no tomato cans here. You know, you have to put up a good game to win. You're not going to coast. So, this is an exciting field just in general. And I think the narrative of Lemoyne and Limestone are going to walk. It might be right. But I don't know, man. I think you're kind of discounting a lot of these other teams.
What is a tomato can?
A tomato can is a fighting term. So, like, if you play someone, they're like a can. Uh-huh. Or if you fight someone, it's like they're a tomato can. It's like an MMA boxing term.
Gotcha.
Well, anyway, that aside, out there, you know, the interesting thing to me is, you know, 12 teams – there's the NCAA Division II tournament has expanded, you know, a few times in a pretty short amount, in a pretty short duration. You know, since I've been here at Inside the Cross, I think it's expanded twice in that time, maybe three times. The regionality has changed. There used to be a central region. There's a lot of different changes that have happened. You know, there's, I guess, a fear of, does it water things down and make a tournament where, you know, there's a team that's beating up on a team that's just there because they needed to fill a spot. That is totally not the case. And I would argue, even when it was a smaller bracket, it used to be the case more. And it's just the level of talent has outgrown the size of the bracket exponentially in Division II. So there's no teams in here that, you know, for lack of a better term, don't deserve a spot in the NCAA tournament. And you can still even, you know, look at teams that were left out and be like, man, those are good teams that, like, you know, if LIU Post, we saw them, Kyle, you saw them beat Merrimack.
Yeah.
You know, they're a team that's transitioning to Division I next year. They could, on any given Saturday or any given Wednesday, beat any team in this bracket. They didn't put up a resume. They didn't do what they had to do at the end of the year to make that happen. But definitely speaks to the depth of talent across the division. And, you know, the North, I think, still has the concentration of talent that you'd expect from just more years of history. So I think those games are all going to be just tremendous battles. But Kyle, like you said, looking well ahead, and we kind of have to in this format, given that they're going to play the quarterfinal round before we record next, the potential for a Lemoyne-Merrimack NCAA semifinals game, the last time they would ever meet, is just explosive. And just like, I am really, really, from a spectator's perspective, you know, and a storyline perspective, that is just a storyteller's dream. I don't know if it's going to happen because I think both teams have tremendous tests. Adelphi, I think at times was the best team in the country. Clearly, they were obviously voted number one, but I think they were the best team talent-wise. I thought they were better than Limestone at a certain point of the year as well. So whoever Adelphi plays, you know, Adelphi is going to be a very, very tall order to beat them. And Lemoyne doesn't have an easy game in its quarterfinal round. Mercy beat them at the beginning of the year. Lemoyne has grown a lot since then. Seton Hill beat Lemoyne last year in the NCAA tournament. So a lot of intriguing storylines. Don't put anything in an ink on your bracket because I don't think there's any sure things there.
Kyle, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Would you agree that a North team is going to win in both the D2 and D3 bracket?
No.
Damn it. I was trying to set up a Game of Thrones question for you. You said yes, but now I can't do it.
I'm sorry. I am the king in the North, but as we know from the show, that doesn't mean anything. So, yeah, I mean, if we want to give our final picks, I feel like we should save that for next week.
Agreed.
But I think, yeah, if I'm going to watch a team, I'm watching teams from the South in the D2 bracket to see what they can do. And listen, Limestone is very good. But I think that Limestone has also faltered in the past 5 years, and that those kind of ghosts, they don't go away real quick. So, you know, I don't think anything's set in stone, but I also wouldn't put it past Salisbury or York to come out on top in the D3 bracket.
You guys making Game of Thrones references, a show I've never seen. I'm making Rush references on the podcast. No one gets it.
Matt's
Josh, I'm so out of touch. What Yentl is? Like,
Matt's
doing?
Only Game of Thrones reference is we probably go to get coffee in the morning three times a week, and one of the women who works at the coffee shop, actually two of them, are obsessed with Game of Thrones, and we always have some serious chatter, and Matt's always just standing there with a smile on his face like, this is another language to me.
It's like, yeah, let's talk about Pearl Jam, and like, you know, no one knows what I'm talking about. So I'll continue to be out of touch, but I'll be in touch with D2 and Division III lacrosse over the next few weeks. We're excited to watch these games unfold over the next few weeks, and, you know, next time we talk on this podcast, we are going to be talking about Division III quarterfinal matchups and Division II semifinal matchups. So that's pretty exciting stuff.
We're going to talk about Lynchburg-Denison. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So whatever you say. All right. Everyone take care. Listen to the interview with Coach Cavallaro about FNM and their path to the NCAA Tournament Championship, and we will see you next week.
Papa, can you hear me?
Special guest this week on the Inside the Cross Division III podcast is Franklin and Marshall coach Todd Cavallaro. Coach, you guys earned one of the coveted Pool C bids into the NCAA tournament. Seeing your name get called on that NCAA selection show, how did you feel? Did you feel like you guys had the resume worthy to get in? Were you nervous? Were you confident? How did you feel kind of in those last few hours up to selection?
Well, we certainly were nervous on this end. Anytime you're looking to get into the Pool C, opportunities, they're always limited. It's always an incredible group of teams that are vying for those precious spots. So I knew we're in the mix, as we have been last year and the year before as well. You know, so I thought it was going to be tough. You know, I was hoping our resume and our body of work throughout the year put us in a pretty good situation. But again, certainly nervous, because you never know what's going to happen. There's a lot of great teams up in the north, and certainly a lot of fantastic teams in the south. And, you know, I've been on both sides. And last year, I think we were one of the last ones not to get in, or one of the first ones out, I should say. So I know that it was going to be awfully close. And when we saw it up there, we were certainly a little bit relieved and also excited to get started again.
And having that experience last year of being a team that was just short of this NCAA tournament entry, did your guys maybe, I don't know, say appreciate it more, or just this opportunity ahead of them, maybe a little more meaningful, you know, knowing what it feels like to be on the other side of that?
Most certainly. You know, we talked about it, that we still have an opportunity. You know, we're in the mix, and our guys knew that. We talked about that last year as well, as we continued to practice during this time. And last year we didn't get their name called. So I think that there was, amongst the team, I think not a lot of people felt really, really confident. Anytime you leave it to Pool C, I think it's tough. And we were brokenhearted a little bit last year. So I think our guys were a little hesitant to get too excited. And they didn't make us wait long, because they showed us in the very first frame of the NCAA selection show committee, showed us right away. So our team was pretty excited when they saw our name up there.
Definitely. And looking at that Centennial Conference semifinal, you guys played Ursinus, a team that beat you earlier in the season, a very, very good team that, you know, I think a lot of people are surprised about. But if you've seen them, or in your case, played against them, you know how talented they are. What's your guys' bounce back from that one goal loss?
Well, I think, our bounce back is we got another opportunity. And you can't take anything away from Ursinus. They won the Centennial Conference, and they beat us by a goal, and they beat Gettysburg in the championship by two goals. You know, and you look back, I think that's why you play the game, and that's why you continue with all these conference play. You know, a team like Ursinus, I think they had a fantastic year overall, and they ended very, very strong, and they're still continuing to play at a high level. With a hot goalie, and they're facing off pretty well, you know, anything can happen, and credit to them is they finished the Centennial really, really strong. You know, our guys, you know, were obviously disappointed. We had exams during the Centennial Conference, so we had a lot going on. We have graduation this Saturday, so a lot's been on our mind a little bit. So we're a little less distracted right now after exams. And I think our guys are just fortunate enough to have another chance and be given the opportunity. You know, in the last couple of days of practice, you know, we've caught that eye of the tiger again and seem to be extremely focused. And they know that we've been given an extra opportunity, an extra lifeline. And hopefully we can show up tomorrow and do what we have to do and make the most of given an extra opportunity.
Looking, you know, taking a season-long kind of look at your team, February 16th was your first game against Lynchburg, and, you know, now we're sitting here months later. How has this team grown? How has this team gotten better? How has this team adapted, you know, over the course of these 17 games that you have played?
Well, I think, you know, most of the hype about us has been on the offensive end, and I think, you know, we got an attack unit that's one of the best I've had certainly here, and I think it's one of the, you know, pretty good nationally as well. But I think overall, you know, we put up some pretty good numbers. We've gotten some nice play in the cage. We're facing off a little bit better than we did at the beginning of the year. And our defense is every week our defense has gotten a little bit tighter, a little bit better at communicating and working overall just better as a unit. So I think from start to finish, you know, you never know what you're going to get on February 16th. We Centennial Conference starts February 1st. So we got 9-10 practices in prior to playing our first game. And then, you know, about midway through the season, I start to feel out this team and how good we can be. And I think it was the W&L game probably in mid-March where we started to really put things together. But I think on a daily basis, the camaraderie that we have, you know, they enjoy being around each other. It's one of the closest teams I've ever been a part of at any level. They just really enjoy being around each other, and they're all great teammates. There's no selfishness, so we played pretty much for the whole year unselfish lacrosse, which we hope to continue. And I think that's really, really important. We formed bonds early in the year, and I think that stuff is paying off now. You know, again, we ran into a tough game in the last semis against Ursinus, but I think they're playing at a high level right now as well. And I think Gettysburg as well. The three Centennial teams, I think, are playing at a high level and hopefully can make a little bit of a run at it.
You've been around this long enough to know that it's not always the most talented team that wins. And some of the things that you just mentioned struck a note there about, you know, this team is one of the closest you've ever had. And I guess how gratifying is it to see those things as opposed to necessarily just, you know, this guy got better shooting with his offhand? How gratifying as a coach is it to see this group come together in those different ways?
It's extremely gratifying. You know, I tell her at the beginning of the year, our number one goal is to become a team. That's first and foremost. And not every year does that happen, you know, we've both been around long enough where some teams, you know, do it pretty well and other teams maybe not. But certainly this year from start to finish, we became a team and we stayed a team through good times and through bad. We stuck together. And I think that's what's really, really important at the end of the day. And it also leads to an extra win or two throughout the year by being a tight team and sticking together and having a common goal. You know, I know when our name was announced, you know, just looking around at the seniors that have poured their heart and soul into this program and they're departing the winningest, the most wins in the history of F&M. Hopefully we can get a couple more here moving forward. But right now they've won at least 6-7 games more than any other team or any other class that has graduated. So the first thing I think all of us thought about, the juniors, the sophomores, the freshmen, the coaching staff, we couldn't have been more excited for the senior class with how hard they worked and how dedicated they were throughout their 4 years to give them another opportunity.
You guys have Stevenson in this NCAA second round. You know, this is going to be on Wednesday afternoon. You'll be playing them. What do you think of your spot in the bracket? You know, playing a team that's traditionally associated with the South, but playing in the North and kind of this task ahead with the Mustangs.
Well, I certainly think, you know, right now it's a one-game tournament for us, and it's all about Stevenson. You know, they have a lot of NCAA experience. You know, Coach Canabene does a nice job with the program. We know they bring a lot of emotion to the table. You know, we got to be able to match that emotion, stay in check, and continue to play diplomat lacrosse and what we've done all year. And I think that's really important. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing is how our guys respond to a big stage in a stage that's going to have a lot of emotion and a lot of intensity and in a physical game. I'm really excited to see how our team responds. So that's first and foremost. We haven't looked, you know, we're not looking down the road at all. You know, it's all about Stevenson tomorrow. You know, for one of our teams, it's fortunate enough to win tomorrow. We have to go up north and face most likely a tough team that's just been fantastic over the years that I think, you know, we'll both have our, you know, Stevenson and F&M. Whoever moves forward will certainly have some challenges. They're a high-potent offense. They have a lot of transition, not afraid to make mistakes, but, boy, they can put up several goals in a short period of time. So slowing down their runs I think would be really, really important. You know, we had a taste of that a little bit in the Mustang Classic when we played Amherst. You know, we played them three quarters even, and one of the quarters I think we gave up 6-7 goals, and that was basically the game. So, you know, I think with that and moving up north, it is what it is. I think, you know, when you get to the tournament, you just be excited to play. You're going to have to play good teams no matter what, and whether it's the first, second, third round, and whether it's in the championship. In order to move forward, in order to win it, you're going to have to beat the competition that lies ahead. So, you know, I think Stevenson's looking at us, and we're looking at Stevenson, and it's going to be a battle tomorrow at 4 o'clock in Shattuck Stadium here on our campus. And then, you know, the winner of that will have to try to dissect probably Tufts a little bit and figure out what you have to do to slow them down.
You mentioned the big stage, and you just mentioned Shattuck Stadium. And, you know, I was there last year for a story on you guys and got to see firsthand the facilities you guys have. And, you know, it's impressive as anyone in Division III lacrosse. How are those coming along, just those, you know, playing in that stadium, the atmosphere that you guys have created? How has that maybe helped you guys along, and how appreciative are you of those opportunities?
Well, we are really appreciative. There's no question about it. I think our guys, you know, they're excited every day. They were before as well at the other stadium that we played in, but now it's just spectacular. Shattuck Stadium is state of the art. You were here. You did a nice article on us, and it's a first class Division III stadium. And you know, our men's and women's lacrosse program really enjoys that, and I think it helps with our success overall. Our guys, our locker room, it makes our bonding that we talked about earlier. There's a lot of guys in the locker room during the middle of the day and you know, watching film, whatever they might be doing, but really bonding through our locker room and then walking out on the field. I think it's just fantastic. We even think our crowds are bigger because of it. We got a lot of local commitment along with the local community and the school itself. We're getting quite a bit of fans to come out, so it seems like we're getting more and more people to the games, which I think is really important as well. We landed what we think is a pretty darn good 2019 class that'll be stepping on campus next fall. And a lot has to do with, I think, where our program is at the moment. And certainly the way that our campus showcases, and now our new stadium, Shattuck Stadium, I think it's a good time to be a part of our program.
Coach, appreciate the time and congrats on all the good things going with the F&M program. Good luck this week.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, and I appreciate all the good work that you guys do.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.